This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I'm sorry for the late start. There's plenty news to talk about. I was deep in today's papers. I see this headline that said eggs could jump to $5 per carton, says SuperValue owner. That's the Guardian business section. I just want to say good morning to all my Meghwana people, all my family island people who have been spending this time investing in local sustainability and was wondering what they was going to do with all them thousands and thousands of eggs they generating on the family islands. I think I see an opportunity here for everybody to win. So I want to say good morning to all my family islanders. I also want to say good morning to the people of Ragged Island, whether you in Nassau, Grand Bahama, Ragged Island, or any of our other islands, if you're born there, you're born there. On that note, if you from Ragged Island and you know one tamarind tree that still got tamarind on it, send us some tamarind to Nassau, please. We would love it. We need it desperately, desperately. First of all, it was very dry in the southern part of the archipelago this year when Nassau was experiencing tons of rainy spells. And so I'm feeling like there's tamarind on the tree in Ragged Island. Please send them up. We need it. We need it. We need it. I hear your tamarind is so sour that in case we run out of limes again, you could always season your fish with tamarind. I also heard that you could season your fish with some of these ganep. They so sour. I'm not mad. This is a good thing. This is a good thing. Everything is a blessing. Everything is a blessing. On another note, sour ganep is great for lemonade and other culinary production. So, you know, don't be sour just because the ganep's sour. It ain't what you think. Welcome to World News Tuesday on the Clock with my guest co-host, Mr. Mark Palmer. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And joining us again from last week is Mr. Luby George.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, world.
We are going to sort of extend our conversation with Mr. George sharing with us some of the things that he has learned during his time as a human rights advocate and with a focus on migration. And we're also going to talk about some of the things that are in the news, both locally and internationally. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So I was just sitting, minding my business, eating sour ganep, when I saw the story over the weekend. First saw it on Eyewitness News, and then it quickly spread through social media. A longtime staff member of the Bahamian Embassy in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, was kidnapped on Thursday, September 1st. The incident took place in the employee's neighborhood around 6 a.m. The ministry said diplomatic staff are not at risk, but additional security measures are being taken. Ministry said, our prayers are with the victim and family for a safe and speedy return. We will assist the authorities to the extent that we can. And yesterday's papers and media houses covered the story, I think, extensively. The Guardian headline, local employee of Bahamas embassy in Haiti kidnapped. Another headline, embassy worker in Haiti kidnapped. I think that's the Tribune. Eyewitness News, foolhardy to leave. More RBDF officers and weapons sent to Haiti following kidnapping of embassy local staff member. Those three stories give us a very good sense of what happened. Commentary from the Minister of Foreign Affairs, commentary from the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Darren Henfield, and commentary from the current Chargé Commander, Godfrey Roll, who is assigned and stationed in Haiti. He is one of 11 local staff and 6 diplomatic staff members at the embassy in Haiti. This is, I would say, surprising, but I've been learning that kidnappings are not are more commonplace than we generally know in Haiti. I could be honest. If I knew they was kidnapping people in Haiti, Mr. George, I think I would have told them close the embassy down. I can't take it. It's too much stress for me.
Mm-hmm. But it's been going on for a long time. You know, when I went to Haiti, even 2015, I would be driving around with my friends. The police would stop us regularly. And they would. The assumption was that I was being kidnapped, right? Because I was only the white person in the car. So they would come up and say, they'd have a little chat and say, and talk to me, is everything okay? And
which boom, is funny. Boom, boom.
But that's going back 7 years before it got to this stage. Yeah. So there was already some kind of... A perception.
Yeah, but it's really gotten worse now, and it's gotten out of hand with the rise of many new gangs that are taking strongholds in certain pockets of the capital. You know, during the times of protesting and the elite, the oligarchs, corrupt public officials who had issues with the late President Jovenel Moïse, who was assassinated, you know, the 7th of July last year. You know, he was trying to stabilize the country. He was trying to revolutionize the country and put it on the right track. But it would not have benefited, you know, those said individuals. Mm-hmm. And so they began funding so that they can destabilize. And now you've seen where, you know, the funding may have, you know, kind of trickled down. Mm-hmm. And so it's a means for them to make money. Kidnap somebody, have you call your family, and the ransom money, that's how they're making their money now.
Wow. And what sort of category of person is at risk of being kidnapped? You see, the embassy worker.
Almost anybody.
My question would be then, is there a political motive, or is the Bahamas sort of tied in to an economic motive, right? Is somebody saying, look here, she worked for the embassy. The country whose embassy she's employed at is likely going to assist in paying out this ransom.
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. It doesn't come into play because we've seen, I know of persons who are close to me who've had family members kidnapped.
Yeah.
Over the past 2 years or so, as it really ballooned, you've seen the profiles of persons who've been kidnapped. You know, I mean, business people have been kidnapped, but the local Joe Blow has also been kidnapped.
Yeah. And so, is this impacting the tourism industry considerably? Is it I know it impacts commerce and trade, right? But does it really impact international trade and tourism?
Tourism, most definitely. Right now, we have regular flights to Haiti. Bahamas Air flies to Haiti, as an example, you know, to bring it closer to home. Bahamas Air flies twice to Haiti, Tuesdays and Saturdays. The Tuesday flights go into Cape Haitian. We've had to go into sending the biggest jet that we have to Cape Haitian because the demand for that particular airport and region has gone up, and it's gone down for Port-au-Prince. So people are flying into Port-au-Prince or flying out of Port-au-Prince. And the same is happening in the States. And you have business people that are afraid to fly into Port-au-Prince and to go and, you know, deal with their businesses and establishment because they fear that it could happen to them in that particular city. So again, it's not 100% relegated to Port-au-Prince, mm-hmm. but the overwhelming majority of the kidnappings is happening there. And so persons are avoiding that area. And so people are afraid to travel mm-hmm. back home through Port-au-Prince.
So I'm a big camper. I'm known on the Family Islands for trying to camp in the bush. And I say it like that because Family Island people, they are the best national ambassadors. From they hear we trying to camp, they like, hold on, first of all, are you broke? I could offer you some place to stay.
Citizen ambassadors, I love it.
Right, you know? And then I went even to a family member's property, Chicchani Hotel. We said we're going to go camp in the yard, you know, enclosed. We're sort of safe near people. They tell us, no. Look at all these beds we have inside. Come inside here, man. So I won't go camping in Haiti. And I feel like, man, if I go into the wilderness, like if I'm sort of relatively unknown and I go in with people, we go into the bush, can I go do that in Haiti?
Like, you can. It's happening. I mean, festivals are still happening. Right. Tourists are still coming in. You're still having tours. People are still, you know, moving around and about in the country. Remember, again, the conventional media keeps their eyes on Port-au-Prince. Mm-hmm. And so we continuously think that this is Haiti. Mm-hmm. No, that is Port-au-Prince.
Right.
I just came from Haiti a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, I frequent Haiti. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I never felt unsafe. I flew into Cape, spent a few days there. Mm-hmm. Then we drove for half a day driving and went up to the Northwest Department in Port-au-Prince. I stayed there for a few days. And then we drove back to Cape when, you know, 2 days before I had to fly back. And I was moving around and about. I was enjoying the nightlife. I was enjoying the scenery, going to the rivers, going up in the mountains, going to the waterfalls. I was doing all of that.
Listen, this is what I see on social media, you know. I think La Suite Haitien, there are a couple of social media platforms, mm-hmm. Caribbean Bodies, which is like a party platform. But I stay seeing these beautiful, gorgeous images of Haiti, of a stable Haiti, right? Of a overflowing with food Haiti, with local fruit Haiti. Mm-hmm. I see the tourism, sort of what we in the Bahamas call tourism images, the beautiful images of the countryside, the hotels, the pools, and most of all, videos of people engage festivals and parties and having a good time. I see all of that, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But like you say, I don't see that through the traditional and mainstream news sites.
It does not fit the narrative.
Right. Now, but here's the thing I'm going to ask
you. And it doesn't sell.
Is the global community, both you know, political and social, sufficiently focused on what is a crisis in Haiti, though?
No.
Like, does it need more attention, more global attention? Or is it the wrong gaze?
Of course, the wrong
perspective.
We cannot downplay the issues.
Right.
At all. You know, Port-au-Prince is the main vein. Everything is centralized in Haiti. Everything runs through Port-au-Prince, and so it you will have that trickle-down effect that would affect the entire country. While the crime may be not happening in other areas as it is in Port-au-Prince, but because it's happening in Port-au-Prince and the businesses, the ports, the government agencies, the banks, you know, they can barely function, it then affects the rest of the country. So we can't downplay that. But however, you know, I do not think that, you know, when you see the reports, it's more like a documentary style thing, you know, to say, here's Haiti, here's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But they're not getting down to the crux of the matter and to say, you know what, let us talk about, you know, possible solutions, possible aid. How do we come in and assist, as opposed to just trying to showcase and say, here's what's happening with them. You know, they can't handle their affairs. We don't know what's going on with those people over there. You know, it continues to be just that. Yeah. Let us highlight this thing. You know, people want to know what's happening in Haiti. Irregular migration is affecting other countries. Here's why, possibly. And they're surmising their own thing. They're creating their own ideas of, you know, this is going to have a, you know, an impact. You saw a spike, or you're seeing a spike in migration. It's because of this. It's because of that. When, in all actuality, if you go to Haiti and you go on the ground, it's a totally different story. What's happening in Port-au-Prince isn't happening in Port-au-Prince, isn't happening in Cape. Cape is a relatively safe city. You don't hear about these things. You know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning during the night, people are out and about. You won't see that happening in Port-au-Prince, though. So why don't you guys try to go down, and we'll be hearing these stuff about fact-finding missions or whatever. Go down and look at Port-au-Prince. Go down and look at Jacques Mel and the Okai and the Cape Haitians and Go Naives. What's happening here as opposed to in Port-au-Prince? What are you guys doing right in these cities as opposed to this particular one that is scaring everyone?
Absolutely.
The challenge is getting to these places, because if you're going up north, it's not a problem, right? But if you want to go down to the south, you have to go to Port-au-Prince and then somehow...
Well, not necessarily anymore, because they're more... The last president, again, they opened up more airports. And so if you fly into Cape, there are local domestic flights in Haiti that can take you from one airport to the next without having to pass through
that international airport. Yeah.
So how do you get there? Where does Bahamas Air fly to?
Bahamas Air flies to Cape and to Port-au-Prince.
Okay.
And so you can fly into Cape and then you can jump on Sun something and you can take a flight. They also go to the DR and you can go over to Jacques Mel or something like that. And then you can continue your journey, you know, and exploring the South or, you know, dealing with your business there.
Oh, wow. Gentlemen, I want to get to some texts, if y'all don't mind. Let's take a pause on the conversation. To my audience, some of these texts are heavy. If I cut it, you'll know that I've opted to not read parts of it for the sake of the collective, right? I've got this text here that says, "Good morning. Does your guest know that he is advocating for terrorists that smuggle and kidnap and kill their own people savagely? Does he know that they are Haitians here in the Bahamas afraid of the borders being opened because they know their people?" Okay.
The borders are open, though.
Yeah. The person
says mean?
Savage killers. Can the Bahamas actually handle this kind of illegals? Why don't they try to go to Dominican Republic, their neighbors next door? Their text, I'm going to address this text because it's full of hate.
It is.
I don't know why.
I don't understand the advocacy part of it, though. Advocating for savage...
Yeah, we're not advocating for terrorists at all. In fact, we only talked about the state of Haiti. We talked about the state of Haiti.
Yeah.
The living in different districts, like living in different constituencies in the Bahamas give you different experiences, like how living in Lifeford Key is different from living in Camp Road. Although both of them... You know, I lie. Let's change that. Living in is like living in the mud. Both of them are shanty towns, right? But the experiences are different, right? Both of them. I'm going to draw the line in certain places. I'm very open to a lot of things. You're going to cause me to tell the people from the Dominican Republic that they can't come here unless they address... what they doing to the people in Haiti. Like, because we know what you meant when you said try to go to the Dominican Republic.
Right.
We know what you meant by that.
Right.
Right.
Go that way so that you can be subjected to some of that.
Right. But their texter, imagine that people applied the same logic to the Bahamas, given that it's easy for them to have a similar perception of the Bahamas as they do of Haiti, with our history of rum smuggling, drug smuggling, human and sex trafficking. In fact, it's been in the papers over the last few days.
But it's
these are real experiences.
Our murder rate right now
in the Bahamas.
What about gang violence in the inner cities? Well, if you look at that from the Family Island perspective, that make people look at Nassauians as they don't want them, or they don't want some of them to come. And so it's the same argument.
Absolutely.
Right?
In fact, Family Island people say that all the time.
True story. Yeah. Based on what you just said, true story. I used to work for a rental car company and was stationed at the airport. Uh-huh. And, you know, I went and picked up one of the executives that was from Freeport. And we just had a candid conversation, you know. And the guy said to me, "Listen, we love Freeport the way it is. Mm-hmm. We love it being dull. We love it being dead compared to Nassau." And his reasoning was, "Should we build it up, then we're going to turn into Nassau. Mm-hmm. All of this violence and crime, we're going to have it too." So the Family Islanders, some people, they have a particular perspective or an outlook on Nassau. So it's the same thing with Haiti. We're only adding perspective and helping you to understand. I'm not advocating for nothing here today.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you don't know. You've never been, probably. So I'm telling you today that there are different parts of Haiti that are not like Port-au-Prince. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying open up the gates and let terrorists or killers or anything in. Get that off your mind, man.
I want to ask the wider audience, and you as well, I'm going to quote from the article from Eyewitness News, Foolhardy to Leave. Godfrey Roll, who's the chargé commander at the Haitian Bahamian Embassy in Haiti, he's quoted here. I'm going to read from the article. Roll has been tasked with advising the minister on security conditions in Haiti and making recommendations for withdrawal if deemed necessary. He told Eyewitness News he personally believed it would be foolhardy to shut the embassy given the critical need to interact with Haitian authorities on the ground. This is my personal opinion, he said. He goes on to say, the fact of the matter is the Bahamas and Haiti have had a history for decades, and the Bahamas is the only CARICOM country that has an embassy in Haiti, and for obvious reasons. We have a lot of Haitians or Haitian Bahamians or whatever the designation is living in the Bahamas. We also have a migrant problem. It would be foolhardy for us to close our embassy and not have any contact with the Haitian government on the ground when we have all of these factors in play. And so after reading that quote and wanting to ask the question, like the wider question, should we close it? Should we keep it open? It is great to get this context and to get a better sense of what is actually happening on the ground in Haiti. And I mean, if you are a cynical person, you know your government don't like to spend money. You know they don't like to spend money on other people. You know that. They're not going to spend money unless it's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't keep people in an unsafe environment. And so it's great to have that context. Mm-hmm. I want to draw sort of a connection to similar situations happening around the globe, but I also want to give you an opportunity to share some more of what you learned while on the ground in Haiti. Mm-hmm. Let's do that now.
Yeah, well, you know, around this exact time last year, I received an email and I was asked to come on over and to assist one of the UN agencies, IOM. At the time, the request was to go down to the south that was following the earthquake last year and to assist with some work there. But upon my arrival, there was an immediate meeting and they decided that I would be better suited or add more value with another project that they wanted me to actually head. So they made me in charge of a displacement and relocation project.
Okay.
And so you had thousands of Haitians that were living at different sites at a sports gymnasium, huge gymnasium, sports field, at some churches, at a local school around the Port-au-Prince area, and these thousands of persons were displaced as a direct result of the gang violence. And within their communities, they reached a point where they did not want to support the gangs and the gang leaders. And so they were seen as enemies of the gangs. If you're not going to support us, you know, they're going to burn your house down. You know, persons may end up being injured or even worse, killed. And so they started to move out. And so the areas were completely blanked. And so my job was to manage a team and send persons out to find suitable housing and to negotiate with the landowners or with the owners of the properties. And then we would pay for we paid for up to a year's rent. We gave them also a stipend so that they can start small businesses, buy groceries and that sort of stuff. And so that's why I was there. And so because I was there, I had to literally go into these zones where the gangs were.
Yeah.
Some of the churches or sites were in the area still.
Yeah.
But because they were at these secured facilities, there was security, there was police, there was, you know, UN agencies assisting them, you know, I had to go in and, you know, in speaking to the people, in moving around, you saw it. You learned about exactly what was happening and the whole idea of, you know, negotiating with gang leaders and Haiti. You know, I'm taken aback at that. I don't think that necessarily is going to or can work based on my experience there. You must understand that the gang leaders are being financed by the oligarchs, by corrupt politicians, by persons who are part of the administration of governance in the country who may not agree with the prime minister or the president. You know, Haiti has a funny system where they have a president, a prime minister, there's the Senate, you know, there's MPs, and mm-hmm. everyone doesn't have to necessarily be from the same political parties. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no political party swoop in. The president is the president. He may be the only person from his political party that won a seat and became the president of the country, and so he won't necessarily enjoy the support of the Senate.
Of a majority of
exactly.
the
Exactly. And,
yeah.
and that is what exactly happened. And that is why he had to at times rule by some executive decree and just decide that, hey, you know what, flip it, I'm going to do it anyway,
yeah.
you know, because I can't get a consensus. You guys can never agree on anything. And the next thing you know, they're on the media, you know, they're launching and announcing protests. And so these corrupt leaders, they are the problem, the oligarchs, the business people. For example, there was this guy that had the contract in Haiti and responsible for electricity. One man. For years, decades, one man. The president decided, guess what? No, man, you can't have a monopoly on that. The government is going to electrify the entire country in 24 months. We're going to have electricity. The government is going to put in roads and infrastructure in this country beginning now. Without you guys' approval, the contract, yeah, the government, we're going to make the money from electricity now. But these are some of the things that led to his demise. And since then, you had a prime minister nominated and came in and took over. The current prime minister decided, had a meeting with about 11 political parties. And you know what he did? Each political party runs a particular ministry in the country now, and everybody's quiet. Each political party, listen, national security, you guys, y'all can have that. Health, y'all can have that. Interior, y'all can have that. Finance, y'all can have that. Split the entire thing up, and now you don't hear those guys making noise anymore. But guess what? The country's even worse now.
Yeah.
You talk about inflation here? Think about Haiti. They weren't making money anyway. Gas was just up to about $12 the other day per gallon.
Whoa. Hold on. This is the same Hillary Clinton Haiti who's trying to...
Okay.
Who fought against a 33-cent increase in the daily wage that would take them to 66 cents
mm-hmm.
a day?
Mm-hmm.
That Haiti?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I listen, to leave Port-au-Prince to go to Cape the other day when I was in Haiti, we had to go to one of the gas station owners' house to get gas. Some persons would go to the gas station from 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. You would go back home that night.
Without gas.
You would spend the entire day. It's gotten so bad that now persons are making more money by selling gas on the side to merchants or to your own people, and they would have, you know, gallons, 5-gallon drums and that sort of stuff, and they're selling gas on the side, mixing it with water. And
you know. I got you. I think we got to go to a break in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I got some texts here. The texts are just coming in. I got to pause you there.
Let them roll.
And I got to pause myself because I'm about to say, listen, and the next person who asks me why Haitians leave in Haiti, I'm going to replay the show. But I got an important text here, particularly from my producer. The text says, we can't get 96.9 clearly via cable channel 969.
Or tune in.
They say, we can't access your station via only streaming. And it's okay to y'all. They're working on it. They got the note, and they're working on it. And I will pass on any other information you share with me via text, any other sites you normally tune in and you can't tune in. Maybe tune in is a problem too. And we're going to get back to this conversation. Another text. Good morning, Ms. Green and guests. The difference is that Nassuvians and Grand Bahamians are Bahamians and Haitians are not. No, texter, you missed the whole point of the analogy.
They missed the point, though.
They missed the point. It's okay. It's as ridiculous as saying Barbados has to open its doors to Bahamian gangsters like they have to entertain their local gangsters from St. Philip Parish. No, you sort of missed the point of it. We were just saying that
some folks are really not listening.
Yeah, Haitians are dealing with things in Haiti with Haitians the same way that Bahamians are dealing with things in the Bahamas with Bahamians. And to say that the two are entirely and completely different is like false, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens in the U.S. The same thing is happening across the world. And sort of the point that Luby is making is that it's less about the people and it's more about the political systems in place. Mm-hmm. And not just like, okay, I vote for the FNM and PLP, although that's a very big part of it, let me point that out. But the systems, the legal, the political, the social systems, the economic systems in place, how we interact with each other, the politics of things.
And the president was pushing and he was going to change the constitution of the country also.
Right.
They were on the verge of having a referendum in Haiti, and the constitution there was going to be revamped so that they can address some of these political issues and loopholes that allow persons who don't, you know, want this political party or this president to shine or to achieve anything to be able to do so. And so these were the things that he was on the verge of doing that could have led to a better, a more stable Haiti where they can build up the country, investors can go in, the diaspora can feel free to come in. And then maybe then we would have seen, you know, less traffic as it relates to irregular migration.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's sort of stick a pin there, right? I found these articles, right? I was just chilling, again, looking at the Gneb tree, waiting for Gneb to fall. Like, who discovered Archimedes? Who did Apple hit him on his head?
Newton.
Waiting for a moment of genius. And I saw this tweet that...
No, Archimedes was in the bathtub. It was Mr. Newton.
Okay, that's all right. I like children in the bathtub. But thank you. The WHO Director General, Tedros... We're going to call him by his first name, Tedros, because I can't remember the pronunciations right now. The WHO Director General suggested that racism is the reason the war in Ethiopia, which has devastated the Tigray region, is not being talked about. Quote, this is what he said. This is the worst disaster on earth as we speak.
Wow.
Right? And then in my research, it turns out that he is descended from Tigray, right? So he has a personal
connection
to it. But then I realized that, you know, Mark, outside of that little blip that I read like earlier in this year or maybe at the end of last year, I did a little segment on what was happening in Eritrea, their elections. But I didn't realize how closely connected it was to what people are actually calling the Tigray War. Now, I'm shocked because, you know, white people like to talk about war. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've been talking about the Ukraine war now. Mm-hmm. I like to call it the U.S. invasion of Eastern Europe and of the whole of Europe, right? That's what I call it. But nobody is talking about the Tigray war. And that's important because what Tedros says is that, what this article says is, though the warfare's true toll is unattainable to know, researchers from Belgium's Ghent University estimate as many as of half a million individuals have died thus far. A million people are dead.
Where's the attention to that?
Between 50,000 and 100,000from actual combat, from actual fighting. Then 150,000 to 200,000 from hunger and 100,000 from the lack of medical care and consideration. Right? That's massive. And then I realize, like, I think Bahamians, in the same way that you highlighted the culture of gangs in Haiti, either you for us or you against us, and that makes you our mortal enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In that sort of way, shouldn't Bahamians see people who are advocating for reform, for safety, for the right to a life free of violence for Haitians and people in Haiti. Shouldn't y'all see us advocates as advocating for Bahamians too? Because we are also caught up in this crisis. We're all like, I don't see Haitians as the only victims of this crisis or living with the consequences of this crisis. I see advocating for Haitian as working towards improving the lives of Bahamians as well, right?
So did you know, according to Global Citizen, a quarter of the entire entire global population lives in conflict-afflicted areas. That's a quarter. You mentioned Ethiopia's Tigray, but there's South Sudan, Syria, there's Yemen, and Afghanistan, of course. And they reckon, they estimate at least a quarter of a billion people will need assistance.
Right, and that's actual war. That's like, okay, Biden have declared war.
Right.
Then we, like last week, I looked at the Rohingya Muslims who have experienced genocide.
Well, look at Yemen, 250,000 people dead.
Yeah,
that makes the Ukraine look like a drop in the bucket compared to that.
You
know, I know no losses is good, but 250,000? And how many of us know about it?
Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, where you're going, Aaron, is, you know, why? You know, I mean, the world focus is on Ukraine. While we agree it's an atrocity, we do not want to see war, you know, kids and people losing their lives. But why isn't there any attention and aid and all of this money and raising funding and opening up hotlines and helplines to Ghana?
Put Americans in debt to support Ukraine.
But not to support
Haiti or Sudan or Yemen.
Right.
There are all kinds of questions that come from that. Of course, you know, I wrote them all down. I don't know if we can have time to get to them. But one of the questions is racism at the root of the global response to conflict or the lack of response in certain areas? Is it, you know, and let's just sort of stick right there for a second. Is that the reason why the U.S. isn't focusing the attention that I think is warranted on Haiti? Like, imagine the political relationship that the U.S. fosters with the Bahamas because of our proximity to the U.S. Like, don't you expect the U.S. to have a greater focus on Haiti, a focus on solving versus being present? Right.
Is it true that it's the largest embassy?
I was just going to go there.
Whoa.
Haiti, think about the entire world. Think about the amount of countries that the U.S. has diplomatic relationships with. Haiti has the fourth largest U.S. embassy in the world, not just the region, in the entire world.
That's bigger than Germany.
In the entire world. Think about that. Think about the amount of U.S. diplomats it takes to have to man that huge fortress that they have in Port-au-Prince.
And
in Port-au-Prince.
We think we are the U.S.'s favorite stepchild because we got that preclearance. Mm-hmm. One of two in this hemisphere, right? But they've got the fourth largest embassy in the world.
In the world.
In Haiti. But does it feel like America is focused on solving the problem in Haiti?
It doesn't feel as if they have a presence at all.
Or protecting their interests in Haiti, which is sometimes counterintuitive to solving the problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And does that exacerbate, right? Does their presence without an authentic or... Because authentic is not the word. Appropriate is more of the word, right? Like a fitting, like something that will actually work, an effective strategy. Is it causing more harm than good? And is that in trickling down to the Bahamas as well?
If you speak to the average Haitian, you know, they would say to you that the U.S. plays a major role in the issues that Haiti has right now.
Yeah.
You know, the political leaders, no one can become president in Haiti without the approval of the United States, is what they would tell you. And we've seen, and it's well documented, where the U.S. has handpicked candidates to become president of Haiti.
See, their texter, that guy was telling you, the Haiti and the Bahamas, we got the same experience.
With Ukraine, we have YouTube of Victoria Nuland. They took it down, I think, recently, where she was indicating who was going to be the next leader in the Ukraine. So clearly that's what you're saying truth, must bear some truth. Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, I get a ton of texts. I don't want people to think that I'm not reading their texts because I disagree with what they're saying. Mm-hmm. We don't do that here. So I can read this first text. It says, and they sent it twice, so I have to read it. Please bring on Lincoln Bain to explain that wicked bill Ryan Pinder is trying to push and calling it belongers' rights. Y'all talking about the 2018 nationality asylum.
Thank you, Aaron.
Bill. The 2018. So I say 2018 because that means that, it, you know, even if it was written by a 2012-2017 PLP administration, it was clearly raised to the fore by an FNM administration, right? So don't just say
I find it very disingenuous what some persons are doing out there and the agendas that they're pushing. But it's so sad that people cannot research and read for themselves, and they want these guys that have these agendas, you know, to come and to push you their narrative and tell you, you know, what it is that they want you to think, and they're buying it hook, line, and sinker.
All right, just a note here. Article in today's Guardian, Thompson, we are doing everything within our power to begin FOI requests. Dear Information Commissioner Keith Thompson, we very excited for this opportunity.
Yeah.
People, because a part of this, right, is that people don't have access to information.
Yeah.
And a part of it is it's just hard to find the information. And then it begins to make you feel like they hiding the information. Mm. Because if the information's supposed to be accessible to the public, why you don't make it easier for me to access it, right? Since I's the public. Mm. That's some parts of what helps to build this state of distrust, you know? I think people are taking advantage of an environment
of distrust. You know, just to back up a bit, because it also ties into the migration thing and the whole Haitian thing and the influx and opening up the gates is what the fear-mongering, what, you know, persons like the COIs and those are doing, you know, is very disheartening because, you know, what it mirrors for me, makes me remember is the referendum and how we allowed it to get muddied and, you know, it was this, but yet persons were saying, no, it's going to be something else. And because of what they fear, everybody just said, you know what, do away with the entire thing. And that is what these guys are doing right now. You know, we're talking about equal rights for women and men, regardless of the situation, to be able to pass on citizenship to their children. But yet these guys are pulling this bill now to try to highlight something else and are forgetting that part of it to fear, to cause these persons to be afraid. And then hopefully the government will pull back on it. That's what they want.
I got you. I got you. Another text. Ms. Green, you and Luby are sellouts. We know what Haiti is all about from the 1800s. Close our embassy, Mr. Prime Minister. Have you ever read the book, The Black Jacobins Texter? Mm. Look here, I'm going to need me a sponsor, please. I mean, I need a sponsor. I need about 12 sponsors, but that's an aside. I'm going to need me a sponsor to help me buy a couple copies of The Black Jacobins. So some of my Bahamians could read up on some of the history of Haiti from a non-Anglo-sized perspective, you know, because if you keep letting the hunter tell your tale, you know, the tale of the lion, you're never going to know about yourself. Rah, rah. That's my little bush lion. You remember when they found the lion in Inagua?
No.
That's what it did sound like. Yeah, they find a little lion in Inagua. A texter says, we don't see white people as violent. Tell the guests. We don't see white people as violent. I think that's a part of the perspective sharing. They also said, I don't mean to sound like a tool, but why would a black person kidnap another black person? Because it sounds counterproductive. Because if you broke and the person you kidnapped broke, what you expect to get? Remember when the people hacked ZNS?
So white people aren't violent, right? What happened to against the Jews just a little while ago? Hmm. 6 million Jews were murdered by who?
Yeah.
Was it black people? No.
It was in
was
fact,
it Rastafari? No. It was white people.
And it wasn't just regular white people, because that's regular white people is like people of European descent, right? You find them everywhere.
But what about the King of Belgium who killed 10 million, who hacked off the limbs of 10 million people in the Congo?
In the Congo, yep.
Was he black? No, I don't think so. So I think people need to, you know, get their perspective.
Yeah. Just look here, reading, watching movies, a wide variety of movies, though, right? Like, you don't have to go to academia. You don't have to go to Aaron Green School of Consciousness, none of that. You just got to expose yourself to more.
Man, YouTube has so many free documentaries, man.
Yeah. Also, y'all remember when they hijacked the computers from ZNS, the beige computers, and Kalika was on the TV, and she just laughed at them? She called the general manager and said, yeah, they got the beige computers, boss. Yeah, you know how many, in fact, that's what I was going to ask. You know how many cookouts we have to have? Okay, I will share. I got you. I will share that, the technical information. Another texter says, yes, bring on Lincoln Bain if you are not biased. Please, that bill is wicked and it only benefits Haitians, not Bahamians. It does benefit us. Explain us. An actual Haitian said he is not happy with what is happening. He said he'd leave in the Bahamas if the gates open.
Where's this? What gates? why do people think that you're advocating for gates to be open? Or if, you know, whomever speaks about Haiti, speaks about the issues in Haiti, you show some sort of empathy towards what's happening there and to the people there, or you want the gates to be open. What? We can't love people? We can't want to see better for them? Let us talk about what's going on there, the root causes of the issues, the irregular migration that we have that is affecting us in the Bahamas that you identify. We would love to help to solve that, but it stems from Haiti.
Yeah.
So let's find out what's going on there. Let's try to help them with in fixing the issue there. And then in turn, it helps us also.
Right. And in many ways, also, if Haiti is subject to global political and economic interference, then trust. The Bahamas is subject to that same, because they call it global foreign policy, right?
They don't hide it.
We're subject to that as well. And so it would be a good idea to practice some empathy and get a sense of or try to understand what is happening and has happened to Haiti historically and currently to prevent it from happening to us or having that thing that has happened to us being entrenched even further, you know, in our politics and governance. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea. So the text says, we agree on that. If the problem stems from there, why don't you go there and fix it? Don't try to fix someone else's backyard until you fix your own. See, I want to respond to this. I don't really see Bahamians focused on fixing their own. Let's address this Lincoln Bain thing for once and for all. It's very, very simple. I keep telling y'all, the first step to a revolution is being able to take care of your citizens. So while Lincoln Bain them on the farm entertaining us like a television show, they could have spent this 9 to 12 to 24 months turning it into an actual farm and feeding actual people with the actual food that they grew there on the farm, proving to everybody the true value of the land that they're trying to own. See, they're trying to own the land, but you own the land by adding value to it. But you all ain't adding any value but personal value to yourself, homes for you to live in. You're not focused on a national housing program or reform. See, ain't nobody calling anybody a huckster or a shyster. We watching what you doing and what you not doing. And I can make this last point. I don't suffer people who take advantage of the vulnerable or the weak. Right? We don't do that. You don't take advantage of people for your own personal and political agenda. And just because members of the PLP and the FNM been doing it for decades doesn't give you carte blanche or license to do it, particularly when you railing against those very same cultures. Okay? We don't big up and support people who take advantage of weak-minded, simple, or even worse, people who are desperate for a better way of life. You see? Because it turns out at the end of the day, Lincoln Bain could be doing to them people the same thing that the smugglers and the traffickers are doing to the desperate Haitian migrants. He's using them to float his boat to a new world, to a better economy. We don't big that up over here. We could talk the talk. You could text me and share your opinion. We're going to do all of that. We're going to create a space for all voices. But we're not going to create a space to perpetuate violence against other people. Because I, as a human rights advocate, and there's one true human right, an inalienable right. We all have the right to a life free of violence, free of political interference, free of anything that would make our lives harder for someone or some group of people's personal, political, economic gain. That's the bottom line.
Well said.
Now, don't let that stop y'all from texting me, though, because I like to row. Y'all like to row. We could do this over and over again. Another text: if the USA really cared, they could levy sanctions on the Haitian oligarch to put Haiti back on track. No, you sort of missed the point. Remember when I called it Hillary Clinton's Haiti? Go research that. Think about it, about what it means. You all and the Tigray gentlemen are all right. It is racism. Don't care if non-European descendants kill up each other in the thousands and millions. I don't forget Rwanda and many others. Mm-hmm. No, and we should not mm-hmm. forget. We should not be made to forget. You know, it is our job. That's our rule. That's the obligation of the diaspora.
Yep.
You can never forget where you come from. Anyway, Mr. George, thank you for joining me today. It's been hot. Hot. Mm-hmm. Mr. Palmer, thank you for joining and building the conversation. What you and Luby have brought to the table today is fabulous. I hope people have heard it. I hope we've been able to sit in our own discomfort, our own fear, and our own frustration and sort of take a moment to try and reason it out. Because we all have the right to a life free of violence. You've been tuned into On the Clock with Aaron Green. Coming up next is Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry. Have a great day, Bahamas.